Chicago is my kind of town.
State Player on 720 WGN. I love all books about Chicago, and this is a great one that we're going to talk about tonight. In early 1909, a new retail emporium readied for business on the wrong end of Oxford Street in London. The man behind it was a little odd American with a wax mustache and a frantic nature. Harry Gordon Selfridge had spent the previous 25 years in Chicago, honing his skills at the venerable Marshall Field and Company before unleashing his concept of retail theater in the United Kingdom. Now, Gail Susick is an author, freelance editor, and with more than a dozen books to her credit, including some really incredible books chronicling vintage Chicago like Marshall Field's, Carson's, and so many others. And joining us to talk about her new book, Mr. Selfridge in Chicago, Marshall Field's, and the Making of a Merchant Prince, is Gail herself. Gail, good morning to you.
Thanks for having me, Dave. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So before we dive into the new book, I was telling you before we got started, love your books. Marshall Field's, The Store That Helped Build Chicago, Carson's, The History of a Chicago Shopping Landmark, Chicago Calamities, Disaster in the Windy City. You got some great books on Door County. They're always so much fun reads, especially when you grew up here.
Oh, thank you so much. They're a lot of fun to write, too. There's a lot of research involved, and it's really interesting. You keep peeling back the layers and, you know, hearing different things.
I bet. And you were saying a lot of the stories intertwine as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So tell us a little bit first, who is Harry Gordon Selfridge?
Well, Harry was kind of a country boy that grew up, was actually born and raised in Ripon, Wisconsin. And he always wanted a little more for his life. And he wanted to be somebody special, I think, to kind of prove to his mother that he could be. And he ended up in Chicago with Marshall Field's for 25 years. And eventually, he briefly had a store here in Chicago, which we can talk about. And then he wound up in London, where he brought the American department store to London.
Well, you know, he kind of had a sad childhood. As I know, his father fought in the Civil War. He was discharged, never came back home to his family.
Right. His mother actually believed she'd been widowed by the war, but she found out the sad truth about 10 years later when she was notified that he had been released and was with many honors and had actually died in a railroad accident and had just never come home to the family.
Wow. And he had a couple of brothers, too, that died at a young age. So he all of a sudden became an only child.
Yeah, it's kind of sketchy. There are very few good birth records for the family. But mm-hmm. Harry was one of three children. He had brothers Charles and Robert Oliver Jr. And there's a lot of conflict in what years they were born. But as near as I can tell, Harry was the youngest.
Okay. And I know that Harry's mother really, you know, with only one son left, really tried to inspire him. And there was a game they used to play that really kind of taught him about what life's possibilities were.
Yeah, they called it supposings. And he said almost every night they'd play this game. She would say to him something like, suppose you get a little salary one day and we're able to buy a nice little cottage. And suppose you get some more and we're able to buy a horse and buggy. And suppose one day you have your own business. And it really taught Harry to think and realize what he was capable of doing in the world that was out there. So it was very inspirational to him.
I would say it makes us all think a little bit that way when you hear something like that.
Oh, absolutely. The woman collected great thoughts like some people collect thimbles. I mean, she was very much into the motivational speakers and mm-hmm. authors of the time.
Wow. Now, years later, as you mentioned, he started as a stock boy at Marshall Field's. How did he get the job there? Like, I know he was in the insurance business for a while. He was doing some accounting. How did he get into Marshall Field's? And it wasn't Marshall Field's at the time either.
It was Field and Leader at the time.
Right.
Yeah, it was when Field's first had the business with his first partner.
Mm-hmm.
Harry had actually worked in a small dry goods store in Jackson, Michigan. And there was a neighboring business called Leonard Field and Company. It was also a dry goods store. It seems like they did mostly rugs. And Leonard Field was the cousin of the great Marshall. And they became kind of friends. I mean, he was somewhat of a mentor to Harry. And he was also a friend of Lois, Harry's mother. And at some point, he said, how would you like to go to Chicago and work for my cousin? It was kind of funny because he talked in later years about how he had just really sold himself to Field, but he'd walked in with a letter in his pocket from Field's cousin, so I don't think he could have blown the interview.
No, probably not. No. Probably not. And what was the store like at the time that he walked into? You said it was, you know, Field Lighter, is that
right.
What it was? What was that store like at the time? Because we're crossing paths now with other books.
But right, exactly. It was beautiful. It was To give a real quick background, Lake Street actually used to be the street of merchants until Potter Palmer changed that. And Potter had a vision to make State Street the street of merchants, which obviously he was pretty successful at. And Field and Leader's store at the time was the first real store that had been built there. It was beautiful. Potter owned about a mile's worth of real estate down State Street, and he anchored one end with this beautiful marble palace that Field and Leader moved into, and the other end with his wonderful Palmer House Hotel.
Very cool. And what were they selling at the time? I mean, was it all-purpose? Were you getting everything from there, or was it mostly clothing?
It was a lot of dry goods, but they had really, really expanded. There at the time, Marshall Fields was mostly wholesale. The retail was very dear to them. But a lot of what they did was go out to the small prairie towns and bring the people all the essentials they needed. So you could buy decks or, you know, wood stain. You could buy needles and thread. You could buy just about anything there.
When you say dry goods, that meant what?
Mostly clothing and things
clothing,
like that.
Yeah,
actually, a lot of fabric at that time. Most people made their own clothes.
Now, Marshall Field really knew how to develop the talent he hired. He was very good at that.
Absolutely. He believed very much in developing the talent and in promoting from within, and Harry was no exception. Just kind of to illustrate Field's attitude, he had a person working for him at the time as a stock boy named John G. Shedd, who you might recognize.
Yeah.
And Shedd eventually worked his way up to take over the company after Field's death. And one time a person had been interviewing them and was talking about how important Shedd was to Marshall Field. And he said, "What would you do if John Shedd ever quit on you?" And Marshall Field said, "Well, I guess I'd hire a new stock boy." So it kind of illustrated his way of moving people up the ladder.
Interesting. I would say he worked under John G. Shedd. And he worked, Selfridge worked his way up pretty quickly. And he had a knack of really, really early on understanding what a shopper wanted.
Absolutely. And he and Field both shared the same mentality that the customer was always right, and that the store should be actually a place of pleasure to go to, not like the old dry goods stores where a woman would scurry in and buy something and run right back out. They wanted shopping to be kind of more entertainment. And Harry picked up on that very quickly and added a lot of his own wonderful ideas and made their retail very, very successful.
Now, he and Fields got along pretty well, but they didn't always see eye to eye. What were some of the issues they didn't quite agree upon?
Well, they were very different personalities.
Yeah.
Field believed in listening more than speaking, so much so that his nickname became Silent Marsh, whereas Harry was very, very exuberant, very enthusiastic, very rapid speaking, so much so that his nickname became Mile a Minute Harry. So you can imagine the two of them had a little bit of trouble relating sometimes.
A little bit of a conflict. Now, Selfridge wanted to put, and I found this interesting because I did not know this history until I read the book, he wanted to put a restaurant in the store, and Fields did not.
No, Field was against it. He kind of thundered, you know, this is a retail store. We don't feed people here. But Harry was smart about it. He realized that, especially at the time, a woman who was out shopping had no options. Most of the places that you could eat along the streets there were...
For men.
Yeah, exactly. They were kind of rowdy pubs. Women didn't go in unattended. So a lady out shopping had two choices. She could go home for lunch, or she could just go hungry all day. And he realized that if he brought restaurants into the store, it would help them to stay longer and obviously spend more money.
Yeah. And this is the story, again, a little crossover here. Let's talk a little bit about Mrs. Herring, because this is how really the Walnut Room began.
Yeah, there's an anecdotal story that is pretty much promoted all the time about the birth of the restaurants. And it says that a Mrs. Sarah Herring worked in the millinery department. And one day she was ready to make a huge sale when the ladies decided they were so hungry they'd have to go home. Well, she didn't want to lose the sale, so she pulled out a chair and table and served them her own lunch, which was a chicken pot pie. And it was so successful that it led into the restaurant. In truth, I'm sure that didn't happen that way. The restaurant was planned out very thoughtfully by both Selfridge and Marshall Field. But there was a Mrs. Herring, and her chicken pot pie is still, I think, one of the number one items on the menu, always has been.
What's a classic. I love
it's wonderful.
There.
So is
my daughter.
Yeah.
We absolutely love that. Well, I'll tell you what, the new book is Mr. Selfridge in Chicago, Marshall Fields and the Making of a Merchant Prince. And there's more coming up next on 720 WGN. All right, it's Dave Player on 720 WGN. We're talking to Gail Susick in her new book, Mr. Selfridge in Chicago, Marshall Fields and the Making of a Merchant Prince. So we're talking a little bit about Selfridge wanting to put kind of his touch on the Marshall Fields store, and we were talking a little bit about the Walnut Room. Now, he encouraged Fields to add services in the store, too, like other than just dry goods. There was medical services in there. There was obviously tailoring and so forth. What were some of the other things that he wanted to do?
Oh, he Field had also brought in the idea of making it a true department store and bringing in a lot of other services. But Selfridge really jumped on that and added more. They had they had optical shops. They had, of course, their food service became very important. Even though Marshall had originally been against the first restaurant, within a year or so, they had seven restaurants because they had seen how wonderful it went. Yeah. You know, so they were very. I'm very much on the same page on a lot of the ideas. Selfridge was probably a little more bold and willing to jump at it, where Field was probably a little bit more cautious. But Field also had
a good balance of management, actually. Yeah.
And Field actually got a lot of pushback from his older employees that felt that Harry was just out of control. But he'd always say, wait, let's try it and see if it makes us money. And it almost always did, so.
Very cool. Very cool. He worked there for over 25 years, became a junior partner.
Yeah. He had been, he had started out, of course, in the wholesale as just a clerk. But he went into retail and just was phenomenal at it. And he made so much money for the store. Field really was impressed with his abilities and what he had done. And Field had every intention of making him a partner. But before that happened, Harry marched into Field's office and demanded a partnership, which kind of threw Marshall for a bit of a curve, I think. But he also realized Selfridge didn't have the money to buy into the partnership. So Field did say, okay, Mr. Selfridge, you'll get your partnership. He made him a junior partner and loaned him, I think it was $300,000 to buy in, which Selfridge eventually paid back with his profits.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at that. Now, he coined the phrase only 3, 5, 10 shopping days until Christmas, creating a sense of urgency. Is
yes.
that true?
Yeah, he was a master at really getting people to shop. He was one of the first ones to start putting the goods out on display and letting people feel them and touch them and, you know, bring them home even on
Because a lot of it was behind the counter.
Exactly.
It had to be brought out in the counter for people to touch and see.
Absolutely.
It's a very different experience.
Yeah, you could not touch the merchandise.
Yeah.
And browsing was really discouraged. Harry told a funny story after he had gone to London, because London, at the time he went there, was very much as Chicago had been with retail. And he walked into a very nice store, and a gentleman walked up to him and said, "What will sir be buying today?" in this very genteel, very polished accent. And Harry said, "I'm sorry, I'm just browsing." And the guy dropped to this low Cockney accent and said, "Then op it, mate, get out of here."
Wow. Much different,
different.
Now, a little bit about his personal life. He married into the Buckingham family, Buckingham Fountain. Her grandfather founded Buckingham and Sturgis. The firm built the first grain elevator in Chicago and signed a contract with the Illinois Central Railway, made a fortune. So he had money and he married into money.
Right, exactly. A lot of people think that it was Rosalie, his wife, that it was her father that built the Buckingham Fountain. Actually, it wasn't. It was uncles and grandfathers and that.
Interesting.
But it was a very, very wealthy family. And Rosalie's father died when she was only 4 years old. But she was left with a large inheritance. And she used it really wisely. She ended up being a real estate developer in her own right and had traveled the world. So at the time she met Harry, she was quite on a par with him. I mean, she had already developed a beautiful settlement along Lake Michigan called Rosalie's Villas, which she had envisioned as kind of an artist colony, and had done a lot with her life already.
She was into tulips as well. She had like 2,000 different types of tulips.
Roses and orchids, actually.
Yeah, roses
I heard
and
she
orchids.
Had
okay.
Something like 2,000 different types of orchids. I didn't even know there were that many different
that's
types.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Now, in the early 1900s, Selfridge opened his own store in downtown Chicago. Where was it located now?
It was actually in the Sullivan Building, which most of us know is Carson Peary Scott, of course, now Target. And that was really interesting. He felt that he wasn't getting enough at Fields. Even though he was very, very wealthy and had been very well rewarded for his work, he really wanted to strike out on his own. And at that time, there was an opportunity. There was a store at what's now the Sullivan Building. There was a store there called Schlesinger and Mayer. And Schlesinger had retired. They'd done a beautiful rehab of the store. They hired Daniel Sullivan, of course, Louis Sullivan to redo the store, and it was just gorgeous. But David Mayer now found himself without a partner, deeply in debt, and just exhausted. So he wanted to get rid of the store. He was trying to sell it to Carson Peary Scott and Company, but they were kind of dragging their feet at the time. So Selfridge walked in, took the money he could make from his selling off his shares of Fields, and actually opened the first Selfridges in the Sullivan Building that lasted, from what I can tell, about 3 to 6 months.
It's crazy. Yeah. And sold it to Carson's.
Yeah, then sold it to Carson's.
Wow.
He joked for years that he was the only person that had ever bought a business from five Jews and sold it to seven Scotsmen at a profit. He was very proud of that.
That's funny, yeah, yeah. I saw that in the book. Yeah. Now, he was retired, but a couple of years later he got bored. He traveled to London and right away realized that the shopping in London was quite mediocre and, you know, was rivaled by stores like Marshall Field's. And he opened up, obviously, the famed Selfridges in London, but he turned shopping into theater. I mean, that was really his claim to fame. I mean, he made this an amazing experience for the consumer.
Absolutely. I mean, I think at first, I don't know that London was ready for him. I mean, he had kind of brought a whole new world to them. He did a lot of kind of crazy things to bring people into the store. When the first powered flight was made over the English Channel, the plane made it over and crashed into the Dover area. The pilot wasn't hurt, but the plane was very damaged. And he immediately rushed there and hired the pilot to bring his plane to the store for a couple of days and, you know, to show the first powered flight. It was kind of funny. It was transported from Dover to the London store by rail car, and it was manifested as one flying machine slightly damaged.
Wow, yeah. That's pretty cool. No, that's very cool. He found great success, obviously, in London, but he spent money like he was printing it, for
yes,
the most part.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. He had no concept of money. One of his bankers once said that he believed that Selfridge enjoyed the sensation of debt. He had a tendency to find showgirls and that who would like to do nothing more than bleed him of his money, and they did quite a good job of it. He would pass out money to these girls. He'd let them walk through the store, pick up whatever they wanted, diamonds, anything, and it was really hurting the capitalization of the store.
Wow. Wow. Well, then he was forced out of the business in the 1940s.
Yeah, eventually. Yeah, even his son, who had gone into the business, Gordon Jr., realized his father's spending habits and just outrageous behavior, gambling, were really hurting the business. And he combined along with the board of directors, and his son was part of forcing him out. His son left on a trip to America when it happened so he wouldn't have to be there. But they eventually told Harry that he had two choices. He could pay the business back what he owed him, which was millions and millions of pounds, or he could retire. And he had no choice but to take the retirement.
And he died broke. He was penniless.
Yeah, penniless, totally penniless.
That's
as a matter of fact,
to me.
Yeah, I mean, he ended up living with his daughter, Violet, and the whole family was pretty poor as church mice by that time. And he used to go down to the store almost every day. He would ride down there on the bus and kind of walk around and tell anybody who would listen that it was his store. But he was so poor and getting so shabby, one time he was arrested for vagrancy. The police wouldn't believe that he was who he said he was.
Wow. Wow, kind of a sad end.
A very sad end, yeah.
Well, the new book is Mr. Selfridge in Chicago, Marshall Field's and the Making of a Merchant Prince, and you can pick it up at your local bookseller, and you're going to be making some appearances in Chicago this week.
Yeah, I will be at City Lit on Wednesday. There's going to be a couple of different authors there talking about some different Chicago subjects, so it should be a lot of fun.
Cool, absolutely.
And then Saturday at the Flat Top Grill on State Street, we're going to have a meet and greet from 10:30 to 2.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Very cool.
Be a lot of fun.
And other great books as well. Gail, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much
and
for having me, Dave.
Happy holidays to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Marshall Field's and Selfridges forever, huh?
Boom. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Thanks again, Gail.
Thank you.
All right. News is next, 720 WGN.